This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support from Mayor President Sharon Weston Broome's office in East Baton Rouge Parish, and the show originates from the Investar Tower in Baton Rouge. And on a day in which part of the country is riveted by an eclipse in Louisiana, it will be largely a non-event, it appears, but it is a big event for the country, and we will be talking about that, I'm sure, as the weeks go by. Today, we start with a guy who has been out in the clouds for a number of years. 40 years ago, he formed Dash Riprock. I know Bill Davis well. We went to college together at LSU, worked at the Reveille together, covering sports.
That's right.
And then he ended up getting a master's degree.
That's right.
From what was the journalism school that now is called the Manship School. But he's better known as the front man for Dash Riprock. And congratulations on staying the course, member of the Louisiana Music Hall of Fame, Bill Davis.
Great to be here, Jim. Thanks for having me on your show. It brings back great memories of sitting at the old journalism school and ignoring our professors.
I was paying attention. I can name every professor I had.
That's amazing. Yeah, I remember a couple, you know, and they were so.
I remember having a class with Ron Gary with you.
Oh, that's
right. Remember Ron Gary?
That was when we talked about technology.
Yeah, there you go. And look what's happened in
that's
the last
amazing.
40 years. But Bill Davis, for those unfamiliar with Dash Riprock, has been one of the top acts in Louisiana for a long time. How many events do you do each year?
Well, we, you know, at the height of our touring, we were playing as many as 250, 275 per year, just around the country and around the world, you know, going overseas. You know, COVID kind of slowed us down a good bit, and we're just coming out of that lull and really hitting the road again and starting to work, you know, all around the country. It's been pretty exciting.
Well, Spin Magazine named Dash Riprock as undeniably the South's greatest
undeniably
rock band.
Hey, we'll take
undeniably.
It. We'll take it.
And it didn't take long, but a listener, Tom on Blue Bonnet, who probably didn't hear you the last time you were on this show, but it's been a few years, and I can understand it. It's a great story. The name Dash Riprock comes from?
Donna Douglas. She's a Baton Rouge native, of course, grew up out on... Greenville Springs Road, and my parents, they'd drive me to Greensburg to see my grandmother, and we would see Ellie Mae out in her front yard tending to her azaleas, and when I got to college, I was looking for a good wild name to name my rockabilly band, and so what better name than her boyfriend, who was Dash Riprock on the show.
Dash Riprock. Who played Dash Riprock, by the way?
It was, now you stuck me. I'm not going to, it was Larry Purnell.
There you go.
And he went on to, he was in a show called Ripcord. That was his big starring, you know, role. But yeah, I've actually got a photo of him signed. So pretty exciting.
Well, I'm sure he's quite proud if he's still with us that there's a band.
Unfortunately not.
In his honor. Now, you have been irreverent. Is that fair to say?
That's a really good word to describe Dash Riprock.
And it kind of all ties together with this event on April 20th, which is the birthday of my dear friend and colleague Blythe Johnson, but also the birth date of Adolf Hitler. And it is a big day for people who smoke marijuana, right?
That's it, yeah. And I don't know how it became that day. I think it's kind of like Pi Day is March 14th, and Star Wars Day is May the 4th, and then all of a sudden, April 20th became, you know, hey, let's smoke pot.
And you are hosting the second annual Everybody Solo 420 Festival.
Yep.
420 as in 420.
Yeah.
And it'll be at the NOLA Brewery, and I suspect at the NOLA Brewery, there will be people lighting up.
I don't know. That's a good question. Last year, there was most people were just eating pizza and drinking beer. It wasn't like, let's just have a big, you know, bong fest. But it's mostly just kind of a counterculture party where we celebrate underground music in New Orleans and give some bands a chance to play to a big audience. And it's more fun than anything. You know, the Rosh Up shows up and they give away a lot of you know, marijuana related goodies. And last year, Louisiana Cannabis Coalition took part as far as putting out information for legalization efforts here in the state. And so it was just kind of laid back. But no, I didn't see anybody smoking pot, luckily.
877-217-5757 is your number. And talk at talklouisiana.org is our email address. Bill Davis leading it off.
Woo-hoo.
And 420 NOLA Brewery, as in 12 days from now, 6:30 start. There'll be a bong raffle. Is that right? I mean, come on. You're out there on the cutting edge.
I think
edge,
on the radio, we have to call it a water pipe. But yeah, for brevity's sake, it's a bong raffle.
All right. 3001 Chapatulas is the place. But this is a free thing, right? That's the operative word in Louisiana.
It is no cover charge. There's four bands. They're amazing, great bands. Incubators from Hammond. There's a band called High from Destrehan. That's appropriate. She Might Be a Beast. It's kind of a cool post-grunge kind of band. And then, of course, Dash Rip Rock closes it out.
Well, 40 years ago, he started Dash Rip Rock, and it was amazing when I saw him. I didn't know this soft-spoken guy, and he was soft-spoken in class.
I was pretty quiet.
Yeah,
in class.
You were real quiet.
We
were quiet. Yeah, and
snoozing.
But it's like this new personality emerges, and what a guitar player! You can play with the best. One reviewer called it blistering performance. Blistering.
Listen, I've had plenty of time to get good on the guitar, and that's one thing I've kind of focused on. And I lived in Nashville for about 6 years as well, and you get humbled when you go up there with all those country pickers. And so I have. I've really tried to improve my playing, and luckily it happened.
Well, Robin Dow has pulled up the aforementioned song, Let's Go Smoke Some Pot, and here's Bill Davis and Dash Rip Rock doing their thing. It reached 2 million streams on Spotify.
We just passed 2 million streams on Spotify.
Yeah, people are into this. And when did you first record it?
It was back in the 90s. You know, it became kind of a modern rock radio hit in the mid-90s and really has taken on a life of its own.
All right. Well, here we go. Bill Davis, Dash Rip Rock, and Let's Go Smoke Some Pot.
I knew you were going to enjoy this. Let's get them going on a Monday.
I think we get the idea. 2010, the Houston Press deemed Dash Rip Rock one of the top 10 Louisiana bands of all time. But I know the clock is ticking. And for a guy like you, I mean, Mick Jagger's still going. He's got 20 years on you.
He's in great shape. He's doing backflips.
And he's going to be at the Jazz Fest, too.
Yeah, that is very exciting.
How long do you think you can keep this going, Bill Davis?
You know, you look at Keith Richards and Willie Nelson and guys that are just rocking straight into their 80s, and then, you know, the sky's the limit. I'm certainly enjoying myself still. It hasn't gotten to be any sort of drag routine or anything like that, so it's still a blast.
Well, you've kept the weight down, and I think that's a big as the Rolling Stones have. These guys have, shall we say, lived a full life, but they haven't gotten paunchy. And,
No. And
when you're out there, as you know,
it's
a physical activity, isn't it?
Yeah,
you get a big workout.
It's true. You know, we jump around a lot on stage, and so I managed to, you know, we call it dasher size. It's just kind of like running back and forth with the microphone.
How does this affect your personal life? All these years, Waylon Jennings and that song, that great song, Are You Sure Hank Done It This Way?
Exactly, Well, strangely enough, I've kind of been able to keep pretty level-headed about the whole deal and not have super high expectations. And everything that I sort of wanted out of the career came my way. And luckily, I was able to kind of steer around all the pitfalls, you know, the alcohol, drug abuse, whatever, and managed to stay healthy. So, I love it. I love music so much. And when you strap on the guitar, you forget about all the problems of hustling and trying to be a rock star and this and that. And just the art of the music kind of overcomes everything. And to me, it's like medicine. It's better than pot.
Well, What's your favorite performing location other than Louisiana?
You know,
I've been all over the world.
Yeah, we you know, kind of got some traction over in Denmark back a while back, and some of the festivals over there were really huge. And I got to meet Lou Reed backstage, and at a couple of festivals, there was a festival called Midfins that we played in Denmark, yeah. And got to meet two of my idols, Lou Reed and Billy Gibbons, backstage, sitting down.
I bet Lou
pizza.
Reed liked your music.
He did. He was very interested in what we were doing, and he wanted to talk to us about our music. And it was just blowing my mind because I'm in worship phase, you know, Lou Reed. Oh my God, Velvet
Walk
Underground.
On the wild side.
Exactly.
I can tell you who didn't like Lou Reed was Johnny Rivers.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
But at any rate, Bill Davis and Dash Riprock, 420 will be at the NOLA Brewery, 3001 Chapultepec at 6:30 on 420. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. We turn the page and go to a serious topic. Shelley Hendricks McLaughlin is with us, the co-founder of Unlocking Autism, a nonprofit organization dedicated to promoting unity and forming strong bonds through proactive services designed to equip individuals living with autism. And she has been on the front lines of this malady, if you will, for some time. And good morning to you, Shelley. It's been a while since we've spoken, but nice to hear your voice again.
It's nice to hear your voice again, too. Thanks so much for having me.
And you have gotten involved in this through personal experience, haven't you?
I have. I have a son who is now 28 years old, who was diagnosed with this with autism 26 years ago in 1998. And we were given a very difficult prognosis at that time, but he is doing very well today.
Well, that's wonderful. Does he live at home?
He does live at home, but he has a busy life. He has been employed at McDonald's for 10 years. He's an Eagle Scout. He graduated from high school. And he has a really, really full life, and he's a very happy guy.
This is World Autism Awareness Month, and Shelley has been doing this for a quarter century now. And there are variations of it. People on the spectrum, my understanding, some might be considered Asperger's, and others are significantly impaired by autism. Where do most people fall?
I think it truly is a spectrum. I wouldn't say that you would have a certain percentage that would fall into any one particular category. Some individuals are very mildly impacted, and some individuals are very, very severely impacted, to the point that they require a higher level of care or services to be able to remain in their community. So probably about 40% of our community struggles severely with communication. And it's not that they don't understand what's being said. It's just that they may have difficulty in expressing that, and they may have a different way of expressing it to people around them.
Tracy at the Capitol asks whether it affects girls more than boys.
We are finding that it is impacting girls more than we originally thought. Traditionally, it was thought that it was primarily impacting boys, but it turns out girls might be a little bit better at masking the symptoms of autism, and they find out a little bit later on in life, possibly, that they have this exceptionality going on. But traditionally, the statistics have been that it impacts boys 4-1 over
4-1
over girls.
Mm-hmm. Over girls. Interesting, yeah. Because I heard Maria Shriver talking about many maladies like Alzheimer's. She says it's 3-1 the other way, but 4-1 boys over girls. And has there been any reason given for that?
There has not been any reason. I know that it's been a significant subject of the research that's been done at the national and international level to find out why there's that disparity. And they have not. There's a number of different working theories, you know, as to how environmental factors may come into play with that, but I don't think anybody's been able to really accurately nail that down.
And you knew the question was coming. I've gotten a couple of emails about vaccinations, and that's been largely debunked. But do you believe that vaccines may have contributed to this?
I testified about that in front of Congress on April 6th of 2000 in front of a House committee. They had a special hearing, so that was 24 years ago, almost to the day. And I stand by my statement that I had at the time, that we were very concerned that that had impacted my son. And I've never revoked that testimony.
But you know it's controversial.
I do know it's controversial. But just because something's controversial doesn't mean that it should be discussed.
I know. I think it should be discussed. But most of the medical community doesn't buy into this. And I've spoken not only to you, but to other parents who are of a similar mind, and some more strongly than others. And they talked about how their children were functioning rather normally for a young person, and then boom, it changed, and it changed right around the time the vaccines were given. Now, I trust the medical community, but you speak from personal experience, and you're convinced otherwise.
I am convinced that it was a contributing factor. I don't know that it was the only contributing factor, but in our son's case, it was pretty cut and dry.
So what advice do you give parents?
With regard to that,
yes.
My advice is to research everything, because you are ultimately responsible for the health choices that you make for your child, that you need to get opinions from your medical professionals, that you need to research it yourself. You need to look into anything that you're going to give your child, whether it's a vitamin or a medication or a food, or what school you're going to place them in, you know. Find out the information about that, because sometimes the choices that you make can have consequences that can cause issues that are more difficult to remedy.
And there are
children in this country who have received substantial payouts through the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, because it was proven that they did develop autism as a result of their vaccines. Their vaccines led to an issue, which then led to their diagnosis of autism. But so it sort of skips that step. But that is something that is true and has happened.
And there's a debate going on at the Capitol right now regarding this as well. And there is a downside to not having vaccinations as well. They generally work, but if they're going to cause other problems, then I can understand why people would be reluctant. But do you have other children?
I do. I have a 26-year-old daughter.
So was she vaccinated the same way your son was?
She was not.
And did she have any issues, one way or the other?
She did not develop autism, no.
Or any other issues from not being vaccinated?
No.
No.
But again, we made that choice, and the choice that we decided to do, you know, people can... I always tell families, you know, if you're going to make that decision, you have to take it very seriously. Like, we research the diseases that we vaccinate against, and we research what we need to do to drive towards health and a stronger immune system. And in doing that, our family has been fairly healthy, and we've been very focused on that. And that has been our choice to do that. We also were aware of the consequences of not choosing to vaccinate further. Now, we weren't necessarily anti-vaxxers. We participated in it, but because we had an adverse experience with it, and because we did not have fully informed decision at the time, we weren't made aware of all of these things. We decided to stop until we understood it further. And so I'm glad that this conversation is more prevalent now with everything that's happened with COVID, and people are taking a look at it. But our family still has questions about it, so...
Are we going to turn the corner on this? You're founder of Unlocking Autism, and some would view unlocking as curing, but is that possible?
I don't know how I feel about the word cure, because and it's controversial in our community, because there are people who really embrace the differences and the qualities that they believe that their autism provides them, the special insight that they may have. So I don't know, it's a tricky word to dance around, but I do think that there are ways to help make somebody's life a lot easier, and we're working on those in the state of Louisiana. through behavioral health supports and growing that industry to be able to help more children have access to that therapeutic care if their families want to pursue that. It's a growing form of therapy in the state of Louisiana. So 8 years ago, Medicaid was spending about $16 million on that annually, and now it's about $150 million. So they have more providers, and of course, we have more children that are being diagnosed.
And how many? We're short on time, but what is the number now as far as boys in particular?
Well, I don't know the number for the boys in particular.
But it's like one out of how many children are affected by autism? Do you know?
When we got started with this 25 years ago, they were telling us it was 1 in 500. But in my son's birth cohort, it was actually 1 in 110 at the time. And so now the CDC diagnostic rate is 1 in every 36 children in the United States.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Shelley McLaughlin. Unlocking Autism. We're back after this. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow producing. Your number is 877-217-5757. Emails to talk at talklouisiana.org. We're joined now by Molly Ryan, Capitol reporter for WRKF. And there is a legislative session ongoing that is eventful. Governor Landry took office, I think, 3 months ago today. And I'd have to say in his first 3 months, he's been a busy bee. Tyler Bridges in his profile yesterday in The Advocate says, Governor, allies consolidate power rapidly as Landry's first months draw some comparisons to Huey Long. I don't move slowly. That's from Jeff Landry, and that's an understatement. He wants legislators to hold a constitutional convention to rewrite the state's constitution for the first time in 50 years, and he's involved in every facet of life in Louisiana, including the national anthem. And Molly Ryan's been covering it with Ernest at the Capitol. Good morning to you, Molly.
Good morning.
Well, what's your take on where we are and where we're going with the session? I guess, depending on what happens with the Constitutional Convention, we may be midway through. I don't know. But what are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I mean, you're absolutely right. It's been a busy year busy first few months for Governor Landry and busy year for lawmakers. And things are really picking up in this regular legislative session. It's been really busy. This week is no exception to that. Lawmakers in the House especially are moving through bills at a pretty quick pace, I'd say, right now. A lot are getting in and out of committee rooms pretty quickly. And that could be because there might be some appetite to go ahead and have that constitutional convention beginning in late May. And so they could be trying to move through a lot of these other bills so that they can shift their focus to the Constitution later.
Well, some of these bills are likely to be dead on arrival. After all, they were unsuccessful in John Bel Edwards' 8 years in office, and he tried all 8 years, for example, to get an increase in the minimum wage, and now we have not only a legislature that is hostile to this, a governor as well. But nonetheless, Molly, I understand there are some bills that would address this.
Yeah, and then they're coming up this week, and they were scheduled for last week, got rescheduled, so we'll see if they stick to the schedule. But there's several bills that have been filed for this session that deal with the minimum wage that actually set a state minimum wage. Louisiana doesn't have its own minimum wage, so we default to the national minimum wage of $7.25 an hour. But there are several bills that look to set a minimum wage of $10 an hour in 2025, and it has the wage growing to $12, $14, or more in the following years. And those are coming up, but you're right, it seems unlikely to pass this legislature. You know, we do have a two-thirds majority Republican legislature that's in both chambers. As you just mentioned, Governor John Bel Edwards was unsuccessful in getting this to pass. And I don't think anything will change, especially if some big organization like Lobby were to come, you know, out against a bill like this. It just makes these bills even more difficult to make their way through the legislature.
We're hearing the voice of Molly Ryan, Capitol reporter for WRKF and for WWNO, and another listener. Who is it? It's Hal in Monroe asking about the buzz at the Capitol regarding the national anthem stance that Jeff Landry took regarding college athletes being present for the anthem. And I see that Brian Kelly, the football coach at LSU, the highest paid public official in Louisiana, put it in perspective, Kelly makes over $10 million a year. The governor makes $130,000 a year, but the governor is his boss. And Kelly says he will follow his boss's instructions. So your thoughts, and what is the buzz at the Capitol, Molly?
You know, I haven't heard this discussed among lawmakers much, and, you know, I think there's been some talk in general at the Capitol that, of course, Governor Landry was kind of quick to get on this issue whenever the LSU women's basketball team was not present for the national anthem, and there was a lot of pushback about, you know, well, they're never on the court for the national anthem, and neither is the football team and the men's basketball team, and so people have kind of been going back and realizing that, you know, this isn't a protest or something, but you're right. He is Brian Kelly's boss, and it seems like he sent all those letters to the higher education boards, and it seems like a lot of those boards will be amenable to Landry's request.
877-217-5757 for Molly Ryan. Gretchen in St. Francisville, you were on Talk Louisiana, Gretchen.
Thank you. I just want to make a quick point about the increase in autism coinciding with society's vastly increased drug usage. And thank you.
All right. Well, that's related to our previous topic. I wish you had called when Shelley was on, but I appreciate your insights, Gretchen, as always, a loyal listener in St. Francisville. Molly and Tyler Bridges' story yesterday, Boise Bollinger, the longtime Louisiana politico and Republican megadonor, says, I would tell you that in my lifetime, I've never seen the stars align for a governor and a legislature as now. And it appears that what Jeff Landry wants, for the most part, he gets. And he is not a shrinking violet. He's going to town, and he's making hay in the sunshine. And there we are with him holding court, getting his way. And, of course, with every move, it's the old law of physics, there's an equal and opposite reaction to that. And Saturday night at the Louisiana Political Hall of Fame gathering, Governor John Bel Edwards closed his address by saying, I'm not out to pasture. I'm a young 57. And I think that's more than a hint that he might be interested in running in 3 years against Jeff Landry. That's a long, long way away. But what a 3 months it's been. It's so frenetic that it's hard to keep track of everything that is being done, Molly.
It is. It is really hard to keep track. And as a reporter, I feel like it's been a whirlwind for me, too. There has been so many things that have happened in Landry's first, well, not even first 100 days in office yet. We're not quite at his 100th day. And so, you know, it is hard to keep track of.
And he shows no signs of letting up.
No. And you know, he said before that Louisiana is behind, that Louisiana is on all the bad list and at the bottom of all the good list. And he said, you know, he acknowledged that people have, you know, expressed concerns about moving so fast, but he said that's precisely what you do when you're behind. No signs of letting up.
May 20th is the prospective date for the start of a constitutional convention. The governor wants the lawmakers to be delegates. And that would mean that the House would have an inordinate influence because there are 105 House members and 39 senators, and he would get to appoint 27 delegates himself. What are the chances of all this happening? What do you think will happen?
Well, I definitely think there's more appetite in the House to have the Constitutional Convention. As I mentioned a little bit earlier, they do seem to be moving through a lot of the bills in the regular session at a quicker pace than the Senate. I know that Senate President Cameron Henry has said, you know, he doesn't think anyone in the Senate will want to stay in Baton Rouge past June 3rd, which is when the regular session is supposed to end. So I think if Landry receives any pushback on the Constitutional Convention, it will be in the Senate. But all of that is yet to be decided. The bill that's been filed has not really been discussed publicly yet.
And Cameron Henry is slated to appear before the Baton Rouge Press Club today. So the public is invited. High noon at Drusilla, and I'm sure there will be quite a crowd to hear what he has to say. Some believe that he is the only obstacle in the way of Jeff Landry. He's of the same party. They, of course, share a lot of points of view, but they have collided a time or two.
Yeah, they have collided, and there's been reports of shouting matches between the two. And when I think one thing Landry did not get his way on this year was the party primaries bill. Back in the first special session, the redistricting session, and it was reported that, you know, the major obstacle was the Senate, and Senate President Cameron Henry pushed back on, you know, a full party primary bill.
Well, another listener notes that this couldn't be playing differently in the court of public opinion than it is at the Capitol. The governor was elected with fewer votes than many people got in defeat, and some in resounding defeats, like Cleo Fields in 95 received more votes than Jeff Landry did in victory. But as I've said before, people are inclined to either vote or not vote. It's a choice. And of those who did, Jeff Landry got a majority and didn't even need a runoff. So I, from that perspective, can understand why he believes the public at large is in his corner, Molly.
Yeah, as you said, it is a choice to vote. And I mean, he won the governorship outright in October in the primary. And so I'm sure, you know, he does feel like the public is in his corner.
Phil in Jefferson Terrace, please be concise. Phil, you're on. Good morning.
Well, good morning. I don't know of a candidate more eligible to be impeached. The man shouldn't even have permission.
Well,
to run for governor.
Now, Phil, that's a ridiculous thing to say because he's not going to be impeached. There is no way that man is going to be impeached. It's ridiculous to even speculate. There's no way. I mean, the legislature is in his corner. It's not going to happen. You may want it to, but you don't speak for the state for legislature, and that's it. Would take the same votes it does for a U.S. impeachment on the federal level, a presidential impeachment. He's not going to get a majority of the House and 2/3 of the Senate to vote to get rid of him. It's just not going to happen. That's the second time you brought it up, and shame on you. It just is not going to happen. But Molly, for those who didn't like Jeff Landry, like Phil, everything he's done has gotten on their last nerve. He certainly doesn't show any resistance to having people poke at him for what he's doing.
Yeah, I can't imagine a situation where he'd be impeached. I mean, I think he'd have to really do something really quite out there to receive.
Well, I don't know that he hasn't broken the law to my knowledge. He's just doing things that Phil doesn't like. And
right. Well, that's what I mean. He would have to do something much like more, I think, you know, ridiculous than anything he's done. And you do have to break the law, but even then he's got the legislature in his corner. So.
Well, we enjoy hearing from you, and we'll be calling on you again next week. Thank you, Molly Ryan, and congrats on the fine work at the Capitol. We're back with Christina Melton after this. Thanks for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number. Christina Melton, Executive Director of the Knock Knock Children's Museum, is with us, and she's held that post for a year and a half after 20 years at high levels of Louisiana public broadcasting. And Friday night, the LSU Hall of Distinction will have its annual event, and one of the inductees is Beth Courtney. And I know you had a long association with Beth, who's in poor health, and we wish her and her husband Bob well. Beth, talk about a force of nature.
She absolutely is a force of nature, and it is a giant in the communications industry across the country. So I don't know that people recognize the contributions that she has made to broadcasting, especially public television. So she really is an incredible woman.
Well, we wish Beth and Bob well.
Absolutely.
Well, the Knock Knock Children's Museum, I mentioned, I was told it was constructed for $14 million. It's a state-of-the-art facility. If you go by I-10 and if you've never been through, you'll see it, and it stands out, and it's a magnificent structure. $14 million, they're talking about building a new LSU basketball arena for over $400 million. So I would say based on investment, you're doing well. And down the street is the rec center at LSU, which was an $85 million boondoggle. But the Knock Knock Museum has gotten not only local acclaim, but national acclaim. And you've got, in particular, on April 11th, Roy Fletcher's 73rd birthday. You got a big event. Roy might be there.
Well, we do. We have some really fun things. We have a lot going on at the museum. And so one of the biggest questions I got when I took over was, when are we going to bring back the adult-only nights at the museum? Because I don't know if you know this, Jim, but unless you have a child, you're not allowed to come into the museum. And so this is one opportunity to visit the museum and have a lot of fun, play like a kid. The kids are not allowed. It's 21 and over. So on Thursday night, we are having one of our nocturnal nights. It's the first time since I've been there that we've had one of our adult-only nights that were a big hit before the pandemic. And so this is going to be a Latin-themed event. We have a salsa dancing instruction and a Latin DJ coming. And we have vendors, a lot of food restaurants from around the city that are going to be participating, and we'll have a tequila tasting. It should be really, really fun. And it, of course, all benefits the museum.
Thursday night, 7 to 9 p.m., Latin night at the Knock Knock Children's Museum. And it is a place that's open almost all the time. You're not closed that often, are you?
We are closed to the public on Mondays. That's sort of our day to recuperate from all of the fun events that we have the rest of the week. So that's the only day we're closed other than major holidays.
All right. And you're, of course, asking guests to come, and at a modest cost, I might say. But if it's Latin night, I'm sure there's a particular Latin theme to this.
There is. So it's $10 a ticket, and you can purchase tickets online at knockknockmuseum.org. And so that's just one of the events we have coming up. We have another event coming up on Monday night, the 15th. We have a speaker who is...
As in a week from tonight, right?
Yes, a week from tonight. A nationally known and recognized educator. She was the chief content officer for a new platform called Teachers Pay Teachers, which is a really innovative way to allow teachers to share and profit off of.
Who is that?
It's called Teachers Pay Teachers. Oh, her name is Michelle Cummings, and she'll be there on Monday night. And again, that's also a ticketed event, but significantly reduced for teachers with their teaching ID. So we would encourage people to also come for that.
You will be open next Monday night.
Yes, next Monday night. That's right.
And you've had a number of events there, and are there any that stand out in your year and a half that are most notable?
Well, I would say our annual gala is the most fun. It is called the Storybook Soiree. Every year we have a theme. This year's theme is Little Mermaid. It's always themed after a very famous children's book, Hans Christian Andersen. Mm-hmm. And it'll be November the 7th. It's a Thursday night before the Alabama game. So we hope everybody marks their calendars, and you won't want to miss it. It's so fun. It's everybody dresses up in character, and we have a great auction, and we have a great band this year. So we're just very excited.
It'd be a great place to see the clips if if we actually had one, but I don't think we're going to have that pleasure in Louisiana. But that is a big deal. My cousin, who runs a marina in Hot Springs, told me this is his biggest weekend in years. People are going crazy over this.
I know. Huh? I have heard that. So I know. I wish, and I think it's going to be a little overcast.
A lot of people are traveling too. It's amazing. I understand in a 2-star hotel in Cleveland is now like $500 a night. Isn't that something?
It is amazing.
But Nocturnal Nights, that's K-N-O-C-K-T-U-R-N-A-L, a little play on words there from Christina Melton and crew. Nocturnal Nights, adult-only fun at the Knock Knock Children's Museum this Thursday, 7 to 9, and we wish you well. And anybody who wants to come, they just show up, right?
Yep, you can pay at the door. You can get tickets in advance and pay at the door.
And it's right there off the interstate at Dalrymple Drive near the LSU campus.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Christina, and congrats on your success.
Appreciate you so much.
And it was on this date 50 years ago at Fulton County Stadium when Henry Louis Aaron became baseball's all-time home run leader. He later would have his record eclipsed by Barry Bonds in 2007, but he held it for 33 years, and he surpassed the legendary George Herman Babe Ruth, who slammed 714 home runs for the Boston Red Sox and New York Yankees, briefly Brooklyn. But anyway, Henry Aaron did it with the Milwaukee Braves, the Atlanta Braves, and then ultimately finished his career with the Milwaukee Brewers and finished at 755. But on this night, 50 years ago, it was a Monday night. It was the game of the week for NBC. Kurt Gowdy was calling the game on national television, but it was the Dodgers against the Braves in Atlanta. And Vin Scully, who was the cream of announcers, who looked at baseball and other sports as more than a game, he put it in perspective when Hank Aaron rounded the bases and headed for home and touched the plate. It was a historic moment as far as pure numbers for baseball, but it also was a significant moment in American culture. And here is the great Vin Scully describing what happened on this night a half century ago, Fulton County Stadium, Atlanta, Georgia.
What a marvelous moment for baseball. What a marvelous moment for Atlanta and the state of Georgia. What a marvelous moment for the country and the world. A black man is getting a standing ovation in the Deep South for breaking a record of an all-time baseball idol. And it is a great moment for all of us, and particularly for Henry Aaron, who was met at home plate not only by every member of the Braves, but by his father and mother. He threw his arms around his father, and as he left the home plate area, his mother came running across the grass, threw her arms around his neck, kissed him for all she was worth. As Aaron circled the bases, the Dodgers on the infield shook his hand, and that was a memorable moment. Aaron is being mobbed by photographers. He is holding his right hand high in the air, and for the first time in a long time, that poker face of Aaron shows the tremendous strain and relief of what it must have been like to live with for the past several months. It is over. At 10 minutes after 9 in Atlanta, Georgia, Henry Aaron has eclipsed the mark set by Babe Ruth. You could not, I guess, get two more opposite men. The Babe, big and garrulous and oh so sociable, and oh, so immense in all of his appetites. And then the quiet lad out of Mobile, Alabama, slender and stayed slender throughout his career. Ruth, as he put on the poundage and the paunch, the Yankees put their ball players in pinstripe uniforms because it made Ruth look slimmer. But they didn't need pinstripe uniforms for Henry Aaron in the twilight of his career.
Vin Scully, one of the great ones, calling Henry Aaron's home run. And he happened to be there because the Dodgers were playing the Braves. Al Downing served up the home run ball. Relief pitcher Tom House caught it in the bullpen. And history was made on this date 50 years ago in Atlanta, Georgia. And millions of people, as noted, are gathering across 15 states today in Mexico and Canada in anticipation of this afternoon's total solar eclipse. Some are expecting, and it's being projected as a dazzling celestial show, and undeterred by gloomy forecasts of low cloud cover and rain spoiling their view, hordes have assembled to the U.S. from Texas to Maine. Safety glasses and cameras have become in vogue with solar filters in readiness for this rare spectacle, and it'll be at about 1:30 Central Time that this happens. Unfortunately, in Louisiana, I don't think we're going to get much of the actions, but officials say they expect 4 to 5 million people to journey in today, bringing in an estimated $1.5 billion in tourist money from what will be the country's biggest travel day of the year. So we'll be talking about this, and hope you have a great Monday. As always, an honor and pleasure to share the microphone with you. Until tomorrow, for Robin Dow, I'm Jim Inkster. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and stay tuned.